Live from the center of the Razorback universe.
The only radio show Razorback fans need to listen to.
Unbiased and unafraid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ruskin and Zach.
All right, we've returned here on the Ruskin and Zach program. Happy to have you with us. Happy to have Tim Brando with us on the Williams Tractor Hotline, Fox Sports. If you know anything about college sports for the last many, many years, you know the voice of Tim Brando. Tim, it's good to talk to you. How are you, sir?
Thanks for just saying many, many instead of almost 40. That makes me sound a lot younger.
Well,
I appreciate that.
We want to have you back, so we're going to try and be nice to you here. So you were on the call of the half of the game that happened last week with at the Big East tournament in an empty Madison Square Garden, and they the Big East pulled the plug at halftime. What was that? I was watching some of that. What was that like to call a game, A, in an empty arena, and then with all the stuff, I don't know if you're aware of all the stuff on the outside about everything else being canceled in college basketball that day?
Oh, yeah. We were all very aware of everything. One of the things that's incumbent upon any broadcaster doing a national game to know what's going on elsewhere. You know, in today's world, it's not just about the game you're covering, but it's about what's going on everywhere else. And if you're not looking at it that way, you'll quickly be toned out by a lot of people, because in the era of social networking, we're all supposed to be plugged into just about everything going on everywhere. But our guys in the truck, our producers and technical people in the truck, were letting us know, because they had satellite downlinks where they were, to take feeds from the Big Ten, and we could tell that the Big Ten games, the teams were out there warming up, and before they could line up for player introductions, they were being called off the floor in Indianapolis. Same was true in Greensboro with the ACC. So we were very surprised that we actually tipped off. So when we did come on the air, there was a tone or thought process. If anyone was watching on FS1 in your area, they would have heard me say, for the moment, we play on in the Big East. So we were skeptical that the game would start, and even suspect of whether the game would finish when we came on the air. But once the game got started, we concentrated on the floor and the players playing. I mean, that's the product that we are bound to produce, and it's our jobs to tell the story of the players playing the game and the coaches coaching the game and so on and so forth. So we began to concentrate on that. But it was shocking the way the game ended at halftime. I never suspected that once they started that they wouldn't finish. We were surprised that they started, but we were equally surprised, I think, that they pulled the plug when they did. But, you know, even after being surprised that they did that, we were, after looking at the bigger picture and seeing what was happening everywhere else, it was certainly understandable why they would have done that. You know, if you look at the big picture from 30,000 feet above the sport of college basketball, it was clear that the optics for that game to continue when all of the other top conferences had ceased play was probably not good. And so probably a couple of minutes or so from the time we were told that the game was called, we began to come to the reality that that was probably the right thing to do. And it was the right thing to do, ultimately. There's absolutely no question about it. It was not as surreal. Yes, it was absolutely surreal. Bizarre, eerie, all of those things. But I have been around a long time, and I've been a part of some crazy things as a result. The 2008 SEC tournament, when we had the tornado hit, I was calling that game between Mississippi State and Alabama. And we wound up finishing the last portion of overtime in that game after the tornado hit. Then we had about an hour and 15-minute delay trying to determine whether Kentucky would play Georgia. Ultimately, that game was called. And then in the middle of the night, they were moving all of the technical equipment from the then Georgia Dome over to the Georgia Tech Thriller Dome where the Yellow Jackets used to play, and that's where we finished the SEC tournament, if you recall.
Yep.
So there was a 30-30 documentary done on that subject. So, and even then, at that tournament, limited access was given. I want to say it was maybe 400 tickets per team that year. It was 200 tickets per team at the Big East for the game with Creighton and St. John's before that game was called.
Tim, were you surprised when the news comes down and, you know, the Big East tournament's canceled, the ACC, the SEC, all the major conference tournaments get canceled, and then that the NCAA acted so quickly to cancel the tournament, may not postpone it 30 days or an indefinite amount of time, but to say, you know what, we're not doing this at all?
No, actually, the surprising part to me is that the NCAA never made a phone call to one conference commissioner before they started their tournaments to tell them that they were going to have limited access for the NCAA tournament. I mean, here are the commissioners of all these conferences that are about to start their conference tournaments either on Tuesday or Wednesday. And Mark Emmert comes out with this grandiose statement saying that they'll have their tournament, but it will be with limited access, meaning only a couple of hundred tickets, I'm sure, allocated per team to every site. Well, that pulled the rug right from underneath all the conferences. And they knew from the moment they went on the floor on either Tuesday night or Wednesday night, Tuesday night for the ACC, Wednesday night for everybody else, that the optics were going to be really bad, that they have a full house ready to go to their games. Why the president of the NCAA never made a phone call to Greg Sankey or to John Swofford or to Val Ackerman or to Mike Oresko or to... I can go on and on. Larry Scott. Of any of this, there was no communication from the NCAA office to the conferences before they started their tournaments. For that not to have been done with a simple conference call and a determination made, okay, this is what we're going to do, so you guys probably need to do this. That's the thing that's surprising to me.
Yeah.
Let's be real. Let's not forget this. Okay, the NCAA, in my mind, is still on the hook for keeping their tournament alive and well with limited access for hours after the conference tournaments had all canceled their games. Okay, it wasn't until after Duke and Kansas sent out tweets through the internet that even if there were an NCAA tournament, they would not compete. That was already done before the NCAA made its announcement that they were canceling. So, again, we go back to what's the biggest problem intercollegiate athletics faces, and I think it's the lack of communication.
Oh.
The inability for well-intentioned leaders to get together and make a consensus decision so that there's uniformity across the board, it reared its ugly head again. Now, ultimately, the right decisions were made, and we didn't play basketball past that woeful first half that we had to do on FS1 that afternoon. Woeful in the sense that it was bad optics. It just didn't look good for anybody. But the facts of the matter are the president of the NCAA was acting on an island, making a decision saying, I'm doing this. I am doing this. And the conference commissioners were sort of forced to do the same thing,
yeah,
fend for themselves. And they ultimately, all of them, were the ones that were having these teleconferences on Wednesday night into Thursday morning trying to determine what the hell they were going to do.
Yeah.
And ultimately, everyone did pull the plug right before. Listen, in the ACC and the Big Ten, they were getting ready to go. I mean, players were dressed. They were warming up. They were ready to play. I think Val Ackerman in the Big East basically said she had been in contact mostly with the mayor's office in New York because the problem in New York seemed to be isolated in the Westchester area around New Rochelle and had not hit Manhattan as yet. That's true. You know, the news of that was accurate. But to my way of thinking, again, I think here's one of those situations where all of the commissioners had an opportunity to do the same thing at the same time, and they chose not to.
Yeah.
So that just tells you that every decision that's being made in intercollegiate athletics today is done by leaders who are representing only their constituency. None of them are looking at the big picture. So we don't have anybody with the purview of 30,000 feet, say, above the fray, looking at the product, looking at the circumstances, and saying and making observations or giving some advice as to what everyone should do. You know, not everything is just about your own backyard. Sometimes there's a bigger picture out there, and unfortunately, in college athletics, we consistently fail to see that.
We're talking with Tim Brando from Fox Sports here on Ruskin and Zach. So, moving forward, is this the moment where the big leagues, Big Ten, SEC, Pac-12, Big 12, the big conferences say, hey, you know, is this the moment? We've toyed with this autonomy thing for a while. Is this the moment where we say we're going to join up and do our own thing and put someone in charge of the main leagues? Is this that moment?
Well, it could be. I don't think it will be. And I think the reason it won't be is because of the money. Right now, the NCAA has this basketball contract until 2032. It funds 80% of the non-revenue producing sports on all of the campuses of all of these programs. Now, as it relates to the Power Five in football, they certainly could afford to do it. If they wanted to break away, they could. But it would come with some risk, the potential risk of losing some revenue that they are accustomed to getting. Big, fat checks from what is a billion-dollar contract that Turner, primarily Turner, CBS pays 20%, Turner pays 80% of the basketball contract. And it's a billion with a B every year. And from what I'm told, based on what happened this year, the contract was to have run through 2032. All of the conferences are going to get their checks that they would normally get. And in return, what they're going to do is just extend the contract by a year and move it to 2033. But I do think if with the time that we have, listen, all the leaders in college athletics right now, like all of us, have a little more time to take a look at the big picture out there. And I would urge all of those leaders to start taking a long look at doing what's in the best interest of college athletics. And right now, the lack of uniformity, the lack of stability has been a real problem in football. It's an even bigger problem when you're dealing with the NCAA in basketball, because they operate clearly on their own. Mark Emmert proved that with the way he handled this situation. Again, no consultation with any of the leaders of any of the other conferences before he chose to make that decision about limiting access to ticket allocation for the NCAA tournament the day before the conference tournaments were cranking up. And we're not talking about just, you know, a handful. We're talking about 19 or more Division I college basketball conferences that were beginning their tournaments. And that is, it's just makes no sense to me. I mean, these are reasonably intelligent people that say they want to do what's right for intercollegiate athletics. And there's nothing right about that. Absolutely nothing right about it. In football, because of the Supreme Court ruling and the fact that the NCAA has no financial stake in it, it would be, I think, a wonderful thing to see that breakaway take place, a complete breakaway from the NCAA. Right now, football just uses the NCAA for a couple of things. Football uses it as a policing agency, and they do a terrible job. Clearly, they're way behind. You know, Yahoo Sports has a better investigative team than the NCAA does.
Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, that's clear.
Yes.
And the second thing they do is they sanction bowl games. They've done a wonderful job of sanctioning more bowl games. And I think the reason they do that is, and they provide a rules committee, which is made up of soccer coaches and volleyball coaches, not football coaches at the Division I level. So I think it would be great for college football to pull away altogether. It would make a lot of sense from a financial standpoint, from a television rights standpoint. They've already done that. They are not, from a football standpoint, there would be no financial risk, okay? But in college basketball, a decision to break away from the NCAA would come with a huge financial risk for your non-revenue producing spring sports and for college basketball.
Tim, I want to nerd out on you for a second, a little broadcast nerd out. I grew up watching you in the late 80s. I was a huge Notre Dame fan. Met you once long time ago at a Notre Dame-Pittsburgh game, you and Coach Dooley. And
wow.
Yeah.
That is going back.
You calling a Rocket Ismail 49-yard run is one of the highlights of my life. Anyway, I've used the phrase the iron unkind in high school basketball broadcasts.
Who hasn't?
Everybody's used it. I consider you and Tony Roberts and Keith Jackson among the people that have influenced me. I was curious, who were your influences growing up as a broadcaster, and did you pattern your style after anyone?
You know, I think all of us have this this soundtrack of our lives in our heads when it comes to sports, and I'm flattered that my voice is part of your soundtrack, and that makes me feel awfully good. Thank you for that. For me, it was Kurt Gowdy, the American sportsman, who called all of the World Series, not just Final Fours and Super Bowls, but the World Series, everything. And then on Sunday afternoons, he and his celebrity buddies would get a couple of pints of their favorite Jack Daniels or Wild Turkey and head out into the wild and fly fish and hunt. And they called that show The American Sportsman on Sundays. He and Phil Harris and Dean Martin and Sonai, it was just awesome. To me, he was the ultimate man's man. And so much so that I named my little brother, who's also a journalist, or was a journalist. He just passed away. If you follow me on Twitter or on social networking, you know my younger brother, Kurt, passed away a couple of weeks ago actually March 5th, so maybe almost 3 weeks ago now. And I named him. We were a Catholic family. We had a surprise baby. I was 12 years old at the time, well on my way to becoming a sportscaster even then. And our mom and dad told my sister and I that if it was a girl, she got to name it. If it was a boy, I got to name the child. And it turned out to be a boy, so I named him Kurt after Gowdy.
Wow.
Fast forward to 1982, the first Final Four in New Orleans at the Superdome, first Final Four in a domed stadium. It was my second Final Four to cover. My first was 81 in Philadelphia with LSU. Kurt Gowdy is doing the game on radio with Kaywood Ledford, the longtime Kentucky broadcaster for Westwood One. And he was still doing The American Sportsman on ABC back then. He was in the twilight of his career. And I was doing a nightly radio show in New Orleans, similar to the one you're doing now. And his producers called my station and said, Kurt Gowdy's available. Would you guys like to have him on your sports talk show? And I'm like, what? You know, and so I had him on my show on the Friday before the semifinals of the 82 Final Four. I got to tell him the story about having a namesake that I had. He's looking at me like, kid, I really respect you, but this can't be real. You know, you are some con man. And I said, well, just to prove it to you, Mr. Gowdy, I'm going to get him on the phone for you. So after we got through with the show, I put him on the phone with the, at the time, 11-year-old brother that I had back home in Shreveport. And when Kurt got on the phone with my brother, Kurt, I could see him tearing up. I mean, he was really moved by it. And I had sent him some of my cassette tapes. He happened to own a bunch of... he was an independent owner of radio stations in West Palm Beach and Massachusetts, up in Boston, where he was from, and in Laramie, Wyoming, where he went to school. And my old owner in Baton Rouge knew Mr. Gowdy, and so he had already heard some of my cassette tapes before he came on my show. And he said, kid, would you like to have breakfast with me in the morning before I go over to the Superdome? And I'm like, are you kidding? Absolutely. I'm there. And we met for breakfast. It was like a three-hour breakfast. He gave me a lot of words of wisdom and became a true mentor for me all the way up until I got to ESPN in 85. And then he used to go to the Final Four every year to MC the Champions Luncheon, where all the Division I, II, III teams' coaches were honored at the NABC Champions Luncheon. which, by the way, is a luncheon that I've done the last 15 years for the NABC. And that was his ticket to go to the Final Four, and I was covering it for work, either at ESPN or at Turner or at Fox. And up until the time he passed away or was too sick to travel, we would get together every Friday for breakfast before the Final Four. That was our annual get-together. So he was my hero, no question about it. Ray Scott, Jim Simpson, who I worked with in my earliest days, who was Kurt's number two guy at NBC. And a little bit later on, no doubt about it, Keith Jackson. A lot of people say to me, you know, Tim, when you call a football game, reminds me of those days. And that's flattering. That is so flattering to me when someone says that. And, you know, when I was working with Vince back in 89, I kind of thought, well, we're going to be, you know, Jackson and Broyles 2.0. You know, that was what right. I was thinking. So I got to know all of those guys. They were all really remarkable. And then later getting to work with Vern Lundquist and with Dick Enberg at CBS in the latter stages of their career was a real thrill. And I looked up to all of them. And to Al Michaels, I think Al is still probably of my generation, even a generation ahead, is probably the best that's out there. All of those guys were sort of the soundtrack of my youth coming up. And I'm forever grateful to them for providing that sort of unwritten handbook on how you went about it, how you could call a game, the way you go about doing the job. You know, most of those guys all came from radio, were coming into television, and we didn't have any, they had no playbook on how to adapt from radio to TV. These guys all sort of gave us the blueprint for the way it should have been done. And but my oh my, there were some great ones too. Charlie Jones, I left him out. Charlie of Fort Smith, Arkansas. Mm-hmm,
that's right.
Wonderful guy with big pipes. And I got to meet Charlie, too. And, you know, he was one of the guys that worked under Kurt and Jim Simpson in the early days of the AFL on NBC. And these were all larger-than-life characters to me. And when I was broadcasting, people said, were you ever in awe of athletes? And I was like, no. You know, athletes I respected, and I wanted to cover them. I was in awe of the broadcast. Communicators. Those were the guys that when I went into a room and I got a little bit, antsy, a little giddy about the opportunity to meet them, it meant a lot. I'm trying to remember the great broadcaster that did Arkansas.
Paul Eales.
Worked with Frank Royals all those years. Yeah. Well, I knew Paul very well.
Yeah.
I'm thinking even ahead of that.
Bud Campbell.
Bud was doing games. Yeah, Bud was doing games on ABC.
Yeah,
when I was in high school.
I
loved Bud Campbell.
We've got a hard out here, so we got to run. We appreciate your time. Thank you so much, sir.
My pleasure. Anytime, and thanks for being someone that listened to me all those years.
You're welcome. Back in a moment. I'm Ruskin and Zach.
Okay, you bet.
Razorback Talk Show designed for smart fans.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
16 after the hour. Happy to have you with us here on Ruskin and Zach. And let's get right to the Williams Tractor Hotline. Hunter Yurecek, Arkansas Director of Athletics, kind enough to spend some time with us there. And Hunter, it's good to talk to you. How are things going?
Derek and Zach, everything's good. All things considered, how are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing pretty good. So I know there's a lot of conversation going on just because there are no games. There's a lot of work happening behind the scenes. It's kind of, what are a couple of the issues that the ADs and the commissioner are kind of working through right now?
Sure. I mean, probably the main issue right now that we're working through is spring sports eligibility. Continuing forward for the student athletes who had their season cut short. What does that look like? Is that another year for everybody involved, another year for the seniors? There's been some conversation, probably not as robust about is there any type of eligibility for the winter sports that weren't able to participate in their championship season. Obviously, the transfer legislation is a hot topic. We haven't forgotten about the name, image, and likeness as well. And then, really, what does it look like when we get restarted again, and when is that? Is that going to be June? Is it going to be July? Is it going to be August? And how do we make sure we have a plan in place so that our student-athletes have the most opportune amount of time to appropriately prepare for the 2021 season? You know, with the, most of these student-athletes, when we get restarted, are going to be have been away from their strength coaches and their trainers and their coaches for probably 90 to 120 days. And so what does that look like getting them prepared for the season?
Hunter, I want to take you back to the, you know, as we started to get information and the NCAA started to make their decisions regarding the spring sports, and obviously you guys were kind of on the tail end of that. You found out relatively, I mean, about the same time we did. Are you getting more or having more conversations with the NCAA now about moving forward, or is it pretty much you and the 13 athletic directors in the SEC?
Well, Commissioner Sankey represents us right now in the communication with the NCAA, and so he's in communication with the other autonomy five commissioners, and then they have conversations with the NCAA. We have representation on various NCAA committees. So what we're doing right now is every morning at 11 a.m., and that's been the case for the last 10 days, the SEC Athletic Directors, we have a conference call that Commissioner Sankey leads, and we're talking through some of this potential legislation of those issues that we just addressed, and then we'll move that forward to the appropriate NCAA legislative committee.
We're talking with Hunter Yurecek here on Ruskin and Zach. How's the morale of your staff, of your coaches that you oversee on the Arkansas campus right now?
You know, I think all things considered, the morale has been fairly good. Obviously, our spring sport coaches, Coach Van Horn, Courtney Dyfel, our coaches in tennis and golf and track and field, probably more disappointed and still trying to come to grips with their seasons being cut short. I mean, I know Coach Van Horn, when you look at having the likes of Heston Kerstad and the Casey Martin and the Casey Opitz coming back, had high expectations for what this season could look like, and so I think the disappointment from our spring sports coaches, I don't know if it's truly set in on those guys, but I would say all in all, the morale has been very high. What I've encouraged them to do is stay connected with their student athletes, because those young men and women are between the ages of 18 and 22. They are so accustomed to having a definitive structure in their life that's been kind of ripped away, and we need to make sure that we're taking care of the mental health and well-being of those young men and women that have gone home and don't have a place to train, are not part of a team per se right now, and those are the young men and women that are really struggling.
Hunter, the next event on the calendar that's going to come up here is spring football, and obviously there's no activity now, but the SEC's postponed spring football. They haven't come to a resolution on whether they're just going to cancel it and move forward. Do you have any sort of indication on which way this might go?
Well, spring football, as we know it, is not going to happen. There's not going to be any spring games on our campus. There's not going to be any spring practice, because I don't foresee any of us getting back on our campuses with our student-athletes for May at the earliest. I know that our university canceled all on-campus activities between now and June the 1st. And so you look at that, and we're into the summer then, and so that's where we're working as a conference. What does the summer look like for our football players and those on our soccer team and our volleyball team and our cross-country team that would have been using this springtime to prepare for the kickoff of the fall season? Well, that's not going to happen. And so if we are able to get them back on campus in June and July, there'll be some interaction that we've never had before with their coaches. And so spring football, as we know, it's not going to happen. It's going to happen at some point in time during the summer so that we can best prepare our student athletes to compete. And I mean, I think we're always going to be worried about winning games, but right now we're going to be concerned about making sure that the health and safety and well-being of our student athletes are where they need to be so that we can kick off our fall season.
We're talking with Hunter Yurecek here on Ruskin and Zach. Have there been kind of a doomsday scenario should this go forward and somehow impact the football season? Have those discussions taken place?
Well, that's what we've tried to avoid, those discussions, and I think that's the worst case scenario. And this COVID-19 has been such a fluid dialogue for all of us over the past week. And we went from Wednesday morning in Nashville, regular AD meetings, just talking about some what-if scenarios, to by the end of the day, we were had made a decision to play the remainder of the tournament without fans, to early the next morning, we had canceled our tournament and ceased all spring sport activities. So this continues to evolve and change as we learn more information as a country about this disease and how it's progressing, and are we doing what we need to do to stop it. And so I wouldn't say that, you know, football starting on September 5th, right now that's still very much what our plan is, but that plan changes on a daily basis.
I want to ask you specifically about Coach Pittman. He's never really had a chance to get his full squad together. They were getting ready for a spring practice. There are teams within the league which have already started spring practice. Are you going to appeal with the NCAA to maybe get some of those dates back or get some extra dates?
No, we're not. You know, what my thought is, I mean, obviously we missed out a little bit on spring practice. There are many schools that haven't had spring practice, and but some that had 3, 6, 9, a couple that got their full spring practice in. When we reconvene, most likely in June, as an industry, I don't think there's going to be a dynamic impact for those schools that may have had 3, 6, or 9 practices in the month of February and early part of March that haven't had any type of impact. What we're trying to push forward is there some ways that we can connect with our student athletes virtually, where we can have some virtual coaching sessions, where there's film study involved, with their coaches connecting by way of FaceTime, whatever the case may be, with their student athletes moving forward, so we can have some film study and engage our student athletes in some of those mannerisms that we're all engaging by right now, so that when we do get back on campus, hopefully early part of the summer, that there's some preparation that's happened through film study that has prepared our student athletes for the mental part of the game of football.
Has there been any guidance or any information on, say, Isaiah, Joe, and Mason Jones specifically, but in general, players have to make that decision on what to do. Are they going to be able to get the same information? I mean, how's that? Has there been any discussion on how that's going to play out?
Well, I think there's a major kind of clinic or evaluation period for NBA players. Part of that's been over in Portsmouth, Virginia. In April, that event has been canceled. So I think as you look at that, the evaluation period for these NBA prospects, what they've had during the months of April and the early part of May before the draft, I think it's be very unlikely that those similar types of evaluations happen. And so I'm not probably as well-versed as I need to be right now on what that looks like. I'm not on the NBA side. I think Coach Musselman has had some conversations with his colleagues in the NBA. I know he's been in conversation with Isaiah and his family and Mason and their family. And so what that looks like for those young men and similar basketball players in their boat, I don't think has been determined yet by the National Basketball Association. And then we'll kind of fall in line from an NCAA standpoint as well.
Was there any thought given to maybe keeping the athletes on campus where you could monitor them, you could test them if need be, before the ultimate decisions were made? Were you ever in discussions of maybe keeping the athletes where you could basically keep an eye on them and monitor their health?
Absolutely. I mean, we had conversations with like that as a league, but it became quite evident that was a responsibility that we did not want to undertake, and it's hard to have this social distancing if you have these young men and women gathered together, whether it be in their academic center or dining facility or basketball facilities and weight rooms in general. And it was in the best interest of their health and well-being to send them home and to be in an environment like we all are in right now, as opposed to being collected. At some point in time, it wasn't about the athlete. It was about the person. And the best thing for the person was for each of these young men and women to return home.
We're talking with Hunter Yurecek, Arkansas Director of Athletics, here on Ruskin and Zach. I've seen some other, most notably Coach Ogeron, do some public service work, trying to encourage people to follow the orders here. Are there any plans with Arkansas coaches to be active kind of encouraging people to stay home and to avoid you know, the social distancing, to do that and everything?
Not at the current time. What we've tried to use our coaches for is to communicate on a regular basis with our student athletes. That's how I want them to be engaged right now. I didn't do, quote-unquote, a public service message. I had something that we put on our website about the close of the athletic season and what was important right now. But what's important right now, what my charge has been to our head coach, is to engage with a regular basis on with their student athletes, and that should be our focus right now. And whether that turns or we get a request from someone across the state for some public service messaging, obviously we'd let our coaches do that. But, you know, right now, Governor Hutchison and his staff, they're doing a great job of managing the public service announcements and the daily updates for our state. And he's the appropriate person to do that within our state right now, from my opinion.
We had Coach Neighbors on last Friday, and you could hear him and how disappointed he was in not being able to send his girls to the NCAA tournament. What are the conversations like with Coach Van Horn, whose season just started, Coach Pittman? I mean, what are you telling them to sort of keep their spirits up through all of this?
I tell you what, our coaches have been amazing. Coach Pittman, Coach Van Horn, I just saw Coach Neighbors over in the weight room at the Basketball Performance Center. Their attitudes have been really positive. I think they understand what is going on in our society. They have been very receptive. I mean, obviously disappointed that spring football practices did not start for Coach Pittman, and obviously disappointed that our women's team did not get to play in the NCAA tournament that they had worked so hard and earned the right to do so. And Coach Van Horn, with the team he had and the opportunity he had to have a run in the College World Series, obviously disappointed, but I think they're all mature enough and understand what this is really about. And that's a testament to the people that they are, first and foremost, that they understand the competitive piece and they're disappointed about that. There's so much more at stake for us as a country, that the health and well-being of every single person across the state of Arkansas, across this region, across the country is what is first and foremost important.
We're visiting with Hunter Yurecek here on Ruskin and Zach on the Williams Tractor Hotline. I think everyone would agree with everything we've seen from Commissioner Sankey to you to everyone that's in charge in athletics here in this state. I mean, you couldn't ask for much more, even from Musselman trying to give people a momentary diversion with some of his videos he's been posting to kind of take your moment. I mean, it's all the whole response in something that we've never seen before, and hopefully we'll never see again. It's been it's been remarkable, because I'm sure you've said at one point, there's no handbook on how to handle a situation like this.
I know what I'm sure you guys are going on from what your day to day jobs are to what we're doing in college athletics, the industries across the state, across the country. There's no handbook for what we're dealing with now. I don't know if anybody has ever been through this in their lifetime and still walking this earth. And I can't think of anything I know in my lifetime. And I think we're all handling about as well as we can handle it. And there's been some funny things on social media. And I mean, Coach Musselman is amazing to go out there and have a practice by himself, to have a press conference by himself, to have a game by himself. And he still went through a game without calling a timeout, which I thought that would have been a funny for him to throw a timeout in there, not at least he got a technical foul in there. And everybody's just, I think, trying to make the best of what is a very difficult situation for us. And guys, I felt like, I told somebody earlier this week as we got, when we concluded with spring sports official, I felt like we just got to the finish line of a 100-yard sprint, and I was just getting ready to start in a marathon. And that's what we're facing as a country right now. We're in a marathon here over the next 30 to 60 days, and we've got to take care of each other, watch out for each other, and make decisions that are in the best interest of people other than ourselves. And obviously we can take care of our own health and well-being, but as long as we heed the warnings that we're hearing from the leaders across our country and we follow those warnings, we're going to get through this, and the finish line is going to be a lot sooner than we think.
When the games do resume, are certain measures going to be put in place to sort of be preventative about this, or is it just going to be business as usual moving forward?
Guys, that is a great question. And I think We will get some advice from the CDC and the Arkansas Department of Health and how we should operate our venues. And, you know, I don't go to the store a great deal, but my wife asked me to stop by Walmart on the way home from working out today, and they wiped down the cart before I grabbed it. And that's something I've never seen, and I think those are some steps. I don't know what those steps will be, but I'm guessing moving forward, as we host sporting events with thousands of people, that there'll be some things, some preventative measures that we will take that we hadn't taken before. What those look like and what they are right now, I don't know, but I'm sure there's some changes to how we sanitize and continue to operate our athletic venues moving forward.
Yeah. Hunter Juracek, Arkansas Director of Athletics, with us here. Well, we appreciate the time, sir, and all the hard work by you and your staff and everyone in the SEC office as well, up the food chain. And thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate it.
I appreciate y'all's support. And I've got a lot more time on my hands than I ever thought I would have in college athletics. So if you need to have me back on to fill some time, feel free.
We would be happy to. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Hunter Juracek and all of our guests join us here on the Williams Tractor Hotline on Ruskin and Zach. So next time we'll get into movies.
Ryan, I was going to ask him, you kind of stole my question. I was actually going to ask him if he was concerned about Coach Musselman out there doing practices by himself. Because that's the first sign that that things are starting to go south.
Yeah. That's been
a lot of good information there.
Now, everyone other than Kim English likes what Musselman's been doing. But Kim English, not a big fan. Now, I'm in the broadcasting business, so it may be different
this.
We're on the periphery of the broadcasting business. But we did talk to Tim Brando yesterday.
We did.
Anyway, and he's on this particular thing I'm going to bring up here. So I don't know if everyone else is seeing this, but are you seeing the best SportsCenter anchor bracket that's going around?
I am not. I have not.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Has anybody seen this? Jason Barrett is a sports radio consultant, programmer, guru guy, and he has put out the Barrett Sports Media, the best Sports Center anchor bracket, and he's put them all out there. It's pretty thorough. I can't, like a great Mount Rushmore discussion, I can't come up with my fourth for the final four, because the first three are pretty easy. Dan, Keith, and Stuart Scott. That's the first three.
Really?
And then I don't know where I go to the fourth one. Do I go? My favorite is Kilbourn.
Oh, Kilbourn should ease, but he there long enough?
Well, that's the thing. There's Steiner,
Eisen,
Rich Eisen. I love Kenny Mayne.
Now, I would put Steiner in over Stuart Scott.
Okay. All right. Well, you're going to get a lot of pushback.
I'm just saying. I thought Charlie Steiner was hysterical. Oh. Him and when he and Kilbourn did it, they were so good.
Oh, yeah. When Steiner would do the 5 o'clock one of 6 Eastern, it would be Steiner and Bob Lee and Robin Roberts. And that was always a mixture of
Steiner carried
of
that.
Good intel, but also they had some fun there. And Jack Edwards was on there every now and then. But, I mean, the top two are Dan and Keith. There's no doubt about that.
They hit their zenith. But where is, like, Tom Meese in there?
Here's what I've done. I think the original three have their own like layer of like Bob Lee, Chris Berman, and Tom Meese are on their own plateau somewhere. They're separate of the four greatest because they're the first. They're the guys that kind of invented doing that more or less. So particularly Berman with the nicknames and the catchphrases.
Kenny Mayne I could do without.
You don't like Kenny Mayne?
He was Randall Cunningham's backup at UNLV and that was like the highlight of his career.
Okay.
Just not like Rusty Jackson says, look, if you want to know where Charlie Steiner's greatness was, go Google Kerry Wood, Charlie Steiner.
Follow me to freedom.
No, Y2K commercial. He's talking about the day that Kerry Wood got arrested for peeing on the wall, and he called it his first relief appearance. And Charlie Steiner's got tears coming down.
Well, also, Charlie Steiner was anchoring when Carl Lewis sang the national anthem.
Oh, yes.
Written by Francis Scott Off-Key was his line. Because he has tears coming down his face laughing after this this clip. There's also now Steve Levy has been there a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He could be in this discussion. Steve Levy has the most famous blooper in SportsCenter history.
What?
The injury was a bulging disc.
Yeah,
that's Steve Levy did not say the S.
But if we're talking about like influence, Larry Beal, I learned that aloha means goodbye from Larry Beal.
Steve Berthium?
No.
No?
No.
Larry Beal. No. Aloha. What about Linda Cohn? She's still on Linda, there doing it. Yeah. LC.
Look, Linda Cohn is the hottest woman in sports. She can talk about hockey.
Hannah Storm.
Yeah.
I like Lindsay Zarniak when she was on there. Lindsay's, she's not doing it anymore.
Nope.
But people love Steiner. Carl Ravitch. I loved Kilborn. To me, that'd be my fourth, I think. I'd go with Kilborn. Even though he wasn't there very long, he went to Comedy
Steiner,
Central.
Kilborn, and Dan and Keith.
I remember reading on the internet, which was a new thing, that Kilborn was going to Comedy Central. And I'm like, what? We don't have Comedy Central in Cersei, so I'll never see him again. And then later he did the CBS show, which I would watch all the time in mm-hmm. college, because it was so meta and weird.
Who's doing that time slot now? It's the
Englishman. He's James. Not funny. What's his name?
Yeah, he's not funny.
What's his name?
James Corden.
Corden. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. No. His best bit is that carpool karaoke thing.
Text out the whole Deep State says Linda Cohn has six toes. Is that accurate?
I'm not sure.
If so, I would like to retract my statement.
I love how we read stuff and have no verification on any of it. So I don't know.
It was Carl Ravitch and Craig Kilborn. The last time Carl Ravitch was good at something.
Carl Ravitch was good on Baseball Tonight. I liked him on Baseball Tonight.
All right.
His play-by-play's gotten better with more reps.
Hannah Storm got Kornheiser suspended.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. Well, Kornheiser got Kornheiser suspended. Yeah, let's be honest about that. Okay.
Yeah, Kornheiser worked himself into that.
That's right. He worked into that.
And by the way, we've got an upset in the quarantine poll.
Yeah,
we'll talk about it, but we got a UMBC thing going on.
16 over a 1. Who called it? I called.
You called it.
That's right.
You did.
Who told you? We did.
That's who.
So, any love for John? Didn't John Saunders do SportsCenter, or was he more of a studio
host?
From
Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd do. I mean, everybody does SportsCenter.
John Saunders. Brando did SportsCenter back in the day.
Mike Greenberg didn't get any votes?
Not for me. No. Remember that horrible time when they had Mike and Mike do SportsCenter?
That was.
They were on the radio in the morning, and then they'd do SportsCenter on Monday night.
Oof, brutal.
Oh, it was all Golic reading off a prompter is not to. No one should have to watch that.
No. It's like watching a gorilla with a suitcase.
That's right. Now, I will say this, though, on Greeny. I liked when it was Greeny and Chris McKendry. That was a pretty good setup there. Is the worst SportsCenter setup Michael and Jamel? It's got to be, right?
Oh, clear.
It was a disaster.
Terrible.
It was a disaster. Stop it. It was a disaster.
Text of the 479, Scott Van Pelt.
Oh, yeah, you got to put SVP. In fact, I would do Dan Keith, Stuart Scott, and SVP.
I would say Steiner and maybe SVP.
I would, and I liked when SVP would be with Scott because Stuart Scott would say, welcome to SportsCenter, Stuart Scott Van Pelt. That's how they would introduce themselves. I like that. Anyway, yeah, I forgot about it. How can you forget about SVP?
Yeah.
Did you ever hear SVP on radio?
Yeah.
My God. He was great.
He was.
He was great. He didn't want to give it up. They made him give it up.
Yeah.
He didn't want to stop.
He's got that show nobody watches now.
Yeah. No. I like that show.
It's because you're a night owl.
No, I'm not.
I like that
show. That's a smart show. I don't know. There's no bad beats right now because there's no games. But anyway. What about when Mike and Mike would call one of the first Monday night games? Like the late game?
Terrible.
What was really bad, Zach, is they would call the game, and then they would record segments for the next day's Mike and Mike. Mm-hmm. So, like, Casilius or someone would be hosting. People have no idea who Eric Casilius is, but anyway. They'd be, like, pitching to these Mike and Mike awkward segments, and it was just terrible. It was just not any good. All right. Anyway, Tony Kornheiser was awesome on radio. Still awesome on his podcast. Tony Kornheiser, that's how you do a podcast right there. If you've ever heard Mr. Tony, the podcast, it's terrific. Some of you won't like the political leaning of it, but just the stylistic part of it is pretty good. He's still complaining about everything. So that's what you got. All right. So anyway, check that out. You can find that. It's one of the mini brackets. I saw someone suggest we do a bracket of all the bad brackets. Just put, you know.
I was thinking about doing like
candies and rock bands and put them all in.
I was thinking about doing a Razorbacks in the SEC football bracket, but I think it'd come down to 11 and 10, right?
Wait, now what now?
If you did the best Razorback football teams of the SEC era, it would come down to 10 and 11, right? It's pretty obvious.
Well, you don't have 64. I mean,
No. I'd probably have 16, I guess. Maybe 8, 4.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I did all that research on their record in the SEC, but I don't have it handy right now.
It's probably stuck to your wall.
No, it might be in there, stuck to the wall. Well, somebody made me mad saying we don't prepare for this thing, so I was going to prove it to them. We actually do. All right. So there you have it. All right. 866-285-4005. You want to get in here on the on the Ruskin and Zach show? Someone texts in La Cheeserie, which is a callback to the Tony Kornheiser podcast. You know how they get Baba Booey?
Mm-hmm.
This is a long, drawn-out story involving Steve Sands from the Golf Channel and his father's liquor store and wine store, La Cheeserie. There have been people, Tony Kornheiser Show fans, who at a golf tournament, you'll hear the shot, and then you'll hear, La Cheeserie! It's made it into the so if into the mainstream.
If La Cheeserie can make it, can Gussie's Boogers make it?
Gussie's Boogers is on its way. If we ever have a golf tournament again, it's got to be in it.
Every time you get a COVID-19 test, Gussie's Boogers!
Someone's going to do it when they play the LPGA in Rogers this year. It's going to happen, and that's what we're here for. And
it might be me.
Might be you. You know, you might be asked to leave after that happens, but that's okay.
I haven't told you the good news about that.
Yeah? Oh, I think you have.
Yeah, we're there.
Oh, yeah. You told me about that. Yeah. Assuming we have it.
Well,
we'll be there. Yeah, we'll be there. Absolutely.
It's not happening this year.
I don't know. We don't know yet.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows what's going on. I hate all these phrases, but they're all true. We are in uncharted waters. Nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow, much less what's going on with something 3-4 months from now. But I just hate that the NCAA was right. Like, they had the best intel and they just didn't share it with anybody. You know?
Well,
they said cancel everything through June.
And they did.
That's
and
where we kind of
100% correct.
Feels like we're headed that way.
The Kentucky Derby is in September. The Masters, they're talking about playing in October.
Yeah.
It's going to be cool in the fall. I mean, you're going to have every weekend, you're going to have something.
Yeah.
But it's going to be, nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Indy 500's off.
Is it?
500,000 people in the same spot, not a good idea.
Now, Sean Payton, we kind of got into this going to break last, but Sean Payton was at Oaklawn last week, and now he has the coronavirus.
Correct. He's the first positive case in the NFL that we know.
So, what does this mean? Did he shake hands with anybody at the at Oaklawn? Because that would seem like that would be a problem, doesn't it?
I believe so. And look, We're in the testing phase, so the discovery of more cases is just natural, because now we're looking for it. Yeah. Everybody settle down. There are going to be positive cases. It's going to go up. I want to know when we hit the ebb point and we're on the
downside. Well, that's the thing.
That's the...
When does all of this start to, show results? All of this staying home and not going anywhere stuff. That's what we're looking for. That's the next thing here, I suppose. I don't know. Nobody knows. All right, Ruskin and Zach, we will return in just a little while. Don't go anywhere.